Blog Talk Radio.
I want so bad to smell the smell only our body chemistry emits. That brown skin mixture is heaven's magic. The love language through our eyes, because we just knew without speaking that nothing need be said. I want my evermore to be my forevermore, forever. Yes, holding hands and nights of just kissing all night. I learn what you teach as we teach we, because we're all that be in this. This black love and how we understand the imperative importance of the continuation of us. I don't just want to be in black love. I want him, we, us, to be of it. Because black love is like a spell of enchantment from a glowing star in far southern skies. Black love is family, loving everything African about each other and ethnicity. Allowing each other to be ourselves. Actually giving each other what we need and want, morally supporting each other's gifts and dreams, romantically showing the love we have through dating like it's a new relationship, and lastly, accepting each other's past as well as to come, unconditionally. That's how bad I want to be.
Dear love, thoughts and memories are leaking from my eyes down my face. I'm a wreck, and it shows up all over the place. I've been trying to hold myself together, but I'll be honest with you, I'm not doing a very good job. I see people who are related to me being put in situations that they needn't be. If a person who says that they love you will hit you, call you a bad name or pull out a gun, that is not love. No, sir, ma'am, not for anyone. I've been emotional since I returned home. I've been lonely without you, and I feel alone. My body craves your touch, and I miss you so much. We're best friends, making new poetry and memories, forming a great bond and building a family. I'm blessed to have you in my life, and I'm grateful that you asked me to be your wife. I wrote this piece when I met the last man who proposed to me, and I'll be honest with you, I don't really have any ex-boyfriends, just husbands and fiancés. I'm blessed, and I know this. I don't take anything for granted, and I hope that it shows. See, every breath that I breathe there, every beat of my heart, maybe my last, who knows? Tomorrow isn't promised to anyone. So I give people their flowers while they're living. I don't want to have regrets when you've gone on to be with the Lord. And I'm sorry, that's just the beginning. I've lost so many. I mean, I took so many L's. I lost people who were in their infancy of life and didn't even get to grow into who they were meant to be. So, more than anything else, I love my friends and my family. I'm blessed to have you in my life, and I'm so happy that God decided that once again he would allow me to become a wife. I can't wait to be with you again. I've been basking in the sun and the moon. That's your light where everything is bright. So thanks, baby. Safety is amazing. This passion is electric. We are polar opposites, yet it is magnetic. I prefer to love without fright, and you made me know it was okay. So I will do it one more again and pray this time I finally get it right. I'm Gina Storm. Thank you for listening.
No more poetry. Today I laid my pen down because no thoughts hit my mind. There was no way that I could find the quill to grip and begin to write these ambivalent thoughts. Now, ain't that a trip? The concept faded from memory that there was something that I wanted to say, something that I had to get off my chest, but I couldn't. But easy does it. These words don't formulate right away. They are corroded by the idea that no matter what I write about won't be remembered, won't be thought of past today. In other words, these words don't mean shit. They're pretty hollow. Because we have become accustomed to loving being mediocre, castrating our greatness for flip chips, dope whips, pretty chicks, and false bravado disguised to look like shiny new promises. Yet we still sell each other out like Africans trying to remain free while they enslave their enemies to supremacists on their way to the new land. So no, today there will be no more poetry. There can't be any poetry until we begin to break the mental chains that are still trapped on bottom of sunken ships, wrapped around the souls of our fathers that just yearn to be free. The souls that never made it to birth, that were supposed to inherit the earth, until we take responsibility for our savagery and stop recapitulating negative imagery and stop to hold each other accountable for the shit that we do as we pretend that we don't even see it. When we stop dehumanizing our women with misogynistic verses, raise our boys to be men to our families, show our daughters the true meaning of love thyself so that she don't meet men that reinforce the need to never date black men again and leave us for other women, and in some cases, men of other races, just to be loved the way that she deserves. When we define ourselves on our own terms and become the powerful sentience we know we are, when we go back to showing each other some love and respect to one another and not just for a few minutes because you heard this shit. When we can get past the pain and strife because it shouldn't take another brother's death for any of you to appreciate life. And we can get out of each other's own damn way. Then there could be some poetry again. At least I hope so. No more poetry. At least I hope so.
See, I am not competing with you. I have no desires whatsoever to win against you. Not because we are not in the same lane, but because we exist on the same plane with enough legroom for us all to crawl, walk, and run when it's our time. To be in competition with you would be to disrespect my own free will and let yours be the wills that drive my intentions. So, respectfully, I have no intentions of occupying the passenger seat of your dreams, but should you need a push, I'll gladly be a propeller. I am not competing with you. You are woman, I am woman, we walk the same earth, yet there's grace to your step, there's a swing to your hips that mine just don't do. They say I walk with a lick or bounce, kinda like the mandem with conviction. Sometimes they even ask me how I identify. So I tell them it is she who birthed me from her womb. He who raised me from him, the tangle with words I learned from them. A dragon spitting fire was groomed, genetically threaded to DNA sequence that dates back to the oldest civilization known to mankind, where women like you and I raised nations. So I have every intention of raising you. And if you so please, you too can raise me. Maybe together we can raise a nation of giants that trod gracefully. See, I am not competing with you. You are man, I am woman. There is no need to lie. A constellation from the same sky. I know with mutual respect we could both fly. And yes, I know sometimes you want to cry. In those times, I have every intention of encouraging the pouring supply of healing waters the cosmos gifted your eyes with. I'll call you king, you call me queen. I'll be the eyes behind your head that you weren't meant to open until now. You'll be the eyes I trust to see ahead because, you know, I'm legally blind. And this one, your 2020 vision arrived just in time for me to resign to my third eye. So following you, I don't mind. To mind would be to question my own judgment. The confidence in me knows I'm dope as fuck, which makes you dope as fuck. So we solid as a rock. You be the rock and I'll be the gentle ground it lays upon. So what competition? This is the age of coalition, of those with vision who need no permission to trust intuition, and not the fiction of set conditions by the opposition on their television. For this mission to reach fruition, one must transition, turn the ignition to premonition, and overstand position is the only ammunition against a system of prescriptions that lead to addictions, which create juxtapositions of fallacious ambitions that only create distractions for distraction from the inborn manual of true instructions, intuition. Not the standardized institutions they call education, founded on unethical omissions of the natural dispositions. So once again, what competition? This is the age of coalition, of those with vision who need no permission to trust intuition. Welcome to the co-edition.
We shared a thought, a moment in time, an idea without even a spoken word. You and I locked eyes. And like stars, our worlds were aligned as you blocked out the sun in the presence of your ecliptic beauty. All else crumbled and faded in the shadows of your smile. Like dusts in the winds of my past, the world ceased to exist. You became my shining sun, and I the moon you rested your head upon. We navigated galaxies, joyfully journeying space and time, freely floating as synchronized energy spending eons, blissfully stargazing the endless possibilities of future memories. Blinded by the radiant shine from love we projected, we frolicked in the sea of life on a companionship we built with smiles and frowns crafted to stand the test of our short-lived eternity of time. Time that would eventually pass us by like strangers. Our life together, birthed, melted away in an instant blink of an eye. A wish surrendered and dismissed the flash of a shooting star. No hellos, no goodbyes, no memories to rewind, only a thought. An idea, a moment in time, time of unknown possibility. Two random grains of microscopic dust particles bumped into each other as eyes connected, only to drift apart with the wind as life went by.
Healing time. Behind that beautiful smile, I can see it. I can see the pain of slight feelings and torn emotions that was left behind from relationships past. The scar. The scar that was left by the emotional assailant, which still generated hurt to the heart's nerve endings, has in some form or fashion affected your everyday living. Unhealed wounds that became infected with mistrust and bitterness has undoubtedly pushed away men that claim they can heal all of your sadness with the right bedroom stroke and maybe a little bit of money to show off. But your emotional scar tissue has increased the gauge of your visual meter, and you immediately dismiss this poor excuse of a man. So because of your past, you choose to be alone for fear that the next man will pick the scabs off old wounds and make them pour out the tears that you thought you were most definitely over. You walk around with this beautiful, beautiful smile, but with a look of please don't approach me because I'm wounded. Then you'll go home and try to drown yourself in Moscato, only to realize the tears are flowing down your face into the very glass that you are holding. The infected wounds of your feelings send an emotional virus to your brain, making you feel like you do not deserve love and that all your relationship problems were just your fault. On top of that, you're constantly hearing the negative conversations from females that are satisfied with being side chicks. And for some reason, their advice at that particular time appears to be right because these are your friends who are giving you this advice and they would never tell you anything wrong, huh? Yeah, right. But there's gonna come a time when a man will appear in your life and it will seem so random, but I promise you it's God's. This man will be ready to go through the struggle of helping you cover your wounds with an ointment of real love and wrap them in a bandage of security. This man will help ease the pain of your past with 800 milligrams of trust that was prescribed for you directly from the pharmacy of his heart. He will use cotton swabs of sweet whispers to remove the negative words that flow from happily infected people like your side chick friend. You will notice a change in your everyday living. You will notice that the pain of sliced feelings and torn emotions that was left behind from relationships past are healing in a way that can only be remembered if you intentionally dug deep into your heart to search for the scar. You feel something that you felt a long time ago, but your heart is no longer familiar with. This something that you're feeling is called love and real happiness. And it is the antidote for the past pain. Now, when you smile, the only thing I can see behind it is us.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll have a special night of conversation. But before we get off into that, I got to go through this rundown. That was a killer rundown. Oh, my goodness, that was huge. Here we go. Storm, she did Dear Love. J-Rob said No More Poetry. Scenario said No Competition. Frequency that it's a moment, and Paul Cram said it was healing time. Oh, man. Well, y'all know what we do. Welcome to Epiphany. This is a very special pop-up here. This right here is it wasn't scheduled or anything like that. Very short notice. And I was going to bring in someone as a co-host. And the knowledge that this person had in a certain area, I said, well, might as well bring you in as an expert. Nah, we'll go ahead and do an interview. That seemed like the best way to go ahead and do this. This young lady is a poet. She's a poet that's currently going through writer's block, so we may not get any pieces tonight. This poet, this woman, this black woman, she is very resourceful. She is energetic, dynamic. Back in the day, she did some MMA, amateur. But she was out there getting it in. She crochets. She cooks. When I say cook, she can cook for a large amount of people efficiently. She has 14 children. And she parents efficiently. I think we're going to learn quite a bit from this conversation. We ask that you guys go ahead and come and get in on the conversation as we normally do. Drop a piece. Pour into the sister. Ask the sister questions because she's here for it. But no further ado, what's going on with you, C. Jane Doe?
Hello, hello, hello. How are you?
Man, I can't do nothing right. I'm supposed to have brought you in as a host, man. You end up with an interview. I be doing stuff backwards all the time.
Oh, no, this is fine. What is going to be? That's it? Not more, no less.
All right, cool. That's how I'm going to get through the day, too. Right behind that. What did you think of that lineup of poetry that just poured through here?
Oh, my God. You know, like you said, I had writer's block. I've been dealing with it for a minute. And there was a couple of times I grabbed my phone, like, I'm going to have to jot some stuff down because my brain, you know, got moving. But what I did do was I went into my notes, and after doing some digging, I actually opened right up to a piece that I did in 2018 when I was in the midst of the drama. And, yeah, as I was looking at this, I was listening to the pieces, and I can't lie, they were so dope. I was like, yeah, this might not be it. You know, I started to second-guess myself because they really did their thing tonight.
Yeah, but, you know, if you'd have been in that lineup, too, it would have been the same thing. It's the energy of the poets, and we were all on the same accord. So, yeah, believing the energy was just carrying over. Like, it might carry right on over to this piece right here. I might go ahead and convince you to go ahead and do.
I got you. I mean, because I can't lie, that was beautiful. It was beautiful. I mean, the first thing that I did, I was trying not to disturb you because I know, you know, you were over there switchboarding, right? But from the very first court, I was in my inbox, you know, texting like, hey, I'm going to need you to send me that lineup of poets. Like, I'm going to need you to send me a recording because it instantly hit me. You know, for a minute, I kind of got
unnerved. We got a whole mixtape. 1 hour of stuff like that right there. 1 hour of solid wall. I'm going to send it to you. It's yours. It's yours again because I sent it to you.
What's up? So what I'm going to go ahead and do is what I said I wasn't going to do, and I'm going to just go ahead and open up with this piece that I said that I found, if that's okay with you.
All right, I tell you what, I'm going to go ahead and hand you the mic. When I hand you the mic, that means that the whole entire stage belongs to you. And with that being said, the mic is yours.
Okay. This is untitled, okay? Thinking, explaining, talking bothers me. Mostly, the answer to everything is, I don't know. I'm not sure of anything. What I want, what I need, whether to trust or not to trust, staying, fighting, running, praying, because I don't know what to say. I don't trust anyone, anything, including my own decisions. I'm stuck in an existence. I don't want advice because I don't know how to shift it from my ears to action. I think about it and acknowledge it, but I remain rooted like a tree. Almost as if I don't control my own limbs. I don't want to vent. It makes me angrier and depressed. Instead, I sit here day by day, knowing what to do and still at a loss for how. I invited the devil in, and it fights energy that I have to remove it. I exist. Somehow, I exist. No more, no less.
Hey, I'm so glad that you did that poem right there. There's a couple of things I want to ask you about this poem.
Yes, indeed.
How does a person get to the point where they have to go ahead and acknowledge that they do exist?
Well, I believe that the first law is self-preservation. And I got to the point where the situation that I was in was taking so much from me that my fight or flight kicked in. And that was literally like a fight for my life. My health had already started to suffer and decline. You know, I was already losing myself and who I used to be. You know, I started off, I had a good memory. I can remember everything. So I would wake up day by day, brain fog, didn't have an idea sometimes what I had walked in the room for. You know, it got so bad to the point where when I would get angry, I would start to stutter. I couldn't even articulate my words. And so I started going in for the doctor, like one of those people who, what you call it, a hypochondriac, as they say, or no. Yeah, hypochondriac. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
and,
that's the word.
I was like, you know what, I think I'm losing my mind. And it took a doctor. I went in because I started going to crisis centers and everything. Like, I just knew something wasn't right, and I felt like I was suffocating. And so I went to a crisis center, and the doctor one time excused my partner because they were so supportive whenever I needed to go to the hospital or something was going down. And he kicked it to me. He was, you know, he asked me a few questions, and he said, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot, so what I want you to do is, like, wink once for yes, twice no type thing. And he was like, it's your problem, just leave the room. And so I had to blink, like, yes. And he was like, Michelle, you're not crazy. You're not losing your mind. He said, what you have going on right now is a normal reaction to an abnormal amount of bullshit. It's just that plain and simple. So he was like, you know, what I want you to do when you leave here is I want you to seek help for you. This is for you. This is not for that person. Because, you know, one thing for sure and two things for certain, you can lead a horse to a water, you can't make him drink. And some people around to hinder your progress. And I already, you know, had, it was already clear that this person wasn't on my team. So it wasn't about, you know, trying to fix the family anymore and make this thing work. It was about getting me together. And so from then on out, you know, I just started to go to the therapy extensively, like you said, but I would only do certain things when my partner wasn't around. And I know this is going to sound kind of crazy to some women, but this is a growing thing now. And since I was in a polygamous relationship, it actually made it very, very easy for me to get my personal time because he would go to the other partner. Especially when he wanted to punish me for something. And after so many years of going through that, I was happy to see him leave. You know, that was my personal time, my work on me time.
I'm trying to be gentle with opening this up, so excuse my nimble feet that I got over here.
But nah, pretty, take your time.
Did the person start this way, or is this some like a late breaking development? What did you see any of this coming? I mean, what?
Whoa! You know, I just lost my breath when you said that because people always say, "Yeah, because you move too fast, you got to know people." This, that, and the third. I knew this person for 10 years from the community before I got involved with this person. When I tell you, whenever anything was going on in my community, they were there. You know, this is actually one of the people in the community that I looked up to, that I admired. You know, I actually thought that they were good people. You know, I remember, you know, back in the day, you know, when I was in my previous marriage, I was like, listen, you know, what so-and-so does for their family, you know what I'm saying? This is what you need. You need to take notes. This is what you're supposed to do for your family. But see, all of that was for us to see. Because what you didn't know was behind the scenes, you know, they could take a person to hell. I mean, as close to hell on earth as you could get. And so, no, this wasn't a sudden thing. After knowing this person for several years, this person was actually close to one of my children. It was a teacher, a coach type situation. To my children. My children admired this person. And so after my relationship ended and I thought his relationship ended, approached me and we started talking. Actually, let me go back. I'm sorry.
Well, hold on one second where... before you do that. Make sure that you don't, we don't want to do this as a, you know, a hit job. We want to make sure that we keep it in the realm of the things that happened to go ahead and get you to the point where you start talking to us in the very beginning, because we still got to go back there.
Oh, no problem. I got you. As I go back, my point of going back is this. if my car broke down, this person, I felt like God would send them because they would show up and, you know, give me a boost. You know, without a gas can, you know, need some help. So it wasn't this person appeared, if you will, to be heaven sent.
You know what? And that's one thing that men are taught when we approach women, as far as to be charming, to be this, to be that. And it seems like when it gets, like, especially with the stuff that we've been seeing on the internet and this industry stuff, things out here are getting really, really far out of whack. People laugh at traditional relationships. Young girls now, they get talked about if they're a virgin. It's something to go ahead and make fun of. There's such a hole here that a lot of people are falling out of position into these different slots, and it's throwing the whole community, the human family community, out of whack. How we even care about life. Me and you did the pre-interview for this, the things that you were talking about, I think a lot of people know it when they see it or know it when they go through it, but they don't really know what it is, that it's the actual mechanism that might be in play here. And the knowledge that you were bestowing on me was next level. I appreciate you for coming in tonight.
No problem. Okay, so yeah, what we don't understand is, you know, when you're looking for a solution to the problem, you know, a lot of the times we stop at the surface, what we see on the surface. We don't really go to the root of the problem. And so there's a lot of elements to why those things are appealing to our children. And the top two is, in our community especially, one of the things is the media raised us. What we hear and what we see. And then now these generations, they even have cell phones and social media. And these things don't teach you to think. They program you on what to think. And the way I feel like it was so easily susceptible for our children to, or our youth, to accept these things is because the examples that we set and the examples that are, that were set, you know, for us. One of the things that I like to do when I talk to my children, and it can annoy them sometimes, but I take things back to the root. We come from a lot of our parents and our grandparents were raised by people who either were slaves or the generation before that, you know, were slaves. And when we were free from that bondage physically, there was no mental rehab. We were just, you know, okay, y'all not slaves no more, going about your way. Now, what we brought, you know, forth from that was the judgment, you know, that judgment, like, you know, some people say, you know, house nigga, field nigga, right?
Right.
They were taught to judge each other, but really what it was, you know, their brokenness, you know, which we know now. And everything that was passed down to us, if you will, was a survival. It was needed for that time. You know,
right. Things were much harder during those times.
For sure. And one of the things that we touched on was men would leave their families and come up north to look for work, which left the women, you know, to be run the household, mama and big mama, you know, whatever. And when you have those dynamics, no men, no structure, in a house, and the women are trying to do these, they have to assume roles that are unnatural, you know,
Because if you look at a lot of things that we're dealing with, is the unnatural way. You see men and women not knowing how to actually be men and women, just imitating what we think that men and women are. I'm sorry, it's such a weighted subject to me, and I'm trying to, like, you know, sum it up. But, you know, what we have to understand is until we understand that those generational curses that, you know, were upon our family, you know what I'm saying, it begins and ends with freeing ourselves mentally, healing ourselves mentally. Because, you know, like I tell, you know, my children, the freedom that our children have now of speech and things like that, we were raised in a time where we didn't have, you know, freedom of speech. In fact, when, no. you know, our grandparents taught our parents to be respectful of, you know, the elder folks and so on and so forth. So I remember when I was growing up, sometimes we would stop by a friend of my mom's or something like that, and they would be like, oh, baby, I haven't seen you in so long, and they would want a hug or a kiss and something, and we couldn't refuse that hug or kiss. Or we'd get in trouble for being rude, right?
Right. You better go ahead and give Aunt Millie that hug.
Right.
She got
and
the
so during the times of bondage, and after that, we knew not to be sassy to our elders. But what they were teaching us, you know, was to
that was the
not
best
have boundaries.
Slavery.
You know, we had to go sit on Uncle So-and-so's lap, and Uncle So-and-so could have been a pedophile, and oftentimes were. You know, so a lot of us, we are damaged, you know, because we've been sexually abused and so forth as children and, you know, so on and so forth, because those things that were taught that were needed for those times, they were taught to us, and we were children of a different, you know, generation. We didn't need that, you know what I'm saying? That wasn't for us. And I had to understand that. So I have, like you said, 14 children. My oldest child will be 32 this year. My baby is 4. I have adopted several different parenting styles along the years, because as I'm growing, you know, as a person and learning about life, I'm learning to see them as individuals and, you know, and find a balance between raising them as an individual and also raising them for the times that we live in.
Right, because the way that our parents were doing, you know, as far as the respectability thing and stuff like that, I always think that's good. But some of those things were vestiges from slavery that were being held over, and actually they were actually hindering us within not only personally, but the people we come in contact with also.
Yes, indeed.
I tell you what, we're going to go ahead. Oh, go ahead. My bad.
I was just going to say, you know, that was actually probably one of the most toxic things that could have been introduced into our community.
Yeah. The rippling effects are still moving through it. It definitely is. We've actually got to a point where the pendulum has swung all the way the other way, where people have got to, there is no respect and there are no laws and the rest of that type of stuff, because the way that we were being raised before was so backbreaking, because it was formed during slavery. All right, we're about to go ahead and hit a commercial up. 954, I see you up in the building, man. We're about to go ahead and make this happen. 815, I see you too. 609, we is in the house. I see this. Let's go ahead and get it in with a little bit of this snippet. Jane with C. Jane Doe.
Take your socks off at Epiphany Radio. What you want to do is to take your socks off at Epiphany Radio. Won't you?
your thoughts off at Tiffany Radio.
For every new level in your life, it requires a new version of you, an excursion of you, the service of you. Begins from within. With bruised shins, I try to stand firm and not squirm under pressure. This undresses the miracle in you, uplift the spirit in you, on command, rebuking the devilish plans against you and your well-being. And this makes haters swell seeing you blessed. Now go and get that off your chest, but do it humbly. I sit comfortably and watch suns set time like watches tick-tocking notches in my climb. Level up to change narrative in the face of savages. My average just went premium. I spit helium, making minds rise. These levels leave haters feeling surprised. I made it this far. Saying, how do you make it with scars? The nakedest odds against me. They couldn't convince me that I ain't ready for the next level. The next devil to get fried, trying to scorch me, toss me flames on my name, or brutally word chewing me. Ain't that incredible? I'm not edible, but flexible enough to bend a pen to inscribe battle cries. When I cross my T's and I dot my I's, I see better. He better not touch this anointing. I'm pointing at the change up there. It costs nothing to will something into existence. The difference between the distance we climb is unlimited, and I'm committed to my next level. I'm the pebble that causes big ripples in a lake thrown. Throw me a bone and I'll home power beyond imagination. I'm exactly the exaggeration you didn't believe in. This is how I achieve wins. Without blowing wind to move crowds, I'm black and I'm proud to reach peaks impossible. I become unstoppable. Let's level up. Whisper loudly.
Man, whispers know he'd be killing me. Dude, smooth for no reason. How you hanging out over there, C. Jane Doe? You, oh, crap. That'll do it every time, I'm telling you.
Sure will.
That sure will. Oh, man. We're about to go ahead and get the first caller in here. How you holding up?
I'm good. I'm well. Thank you.
All right. Cool. 954. How about you?
Hey, how you doing? Oh man, Jane Doe, man, it was lovely to hear you. My first time hearing you, and this was amazing. I love what you do, and. I was trying to think of what I wanted to bring to represent why we're here. When I was looking at the title about relationships, and then I was listening to what you were saying as well. And I think I got something nice for you.
Okay.
Hold on. Yeah.
Hey, CJ and Doe, do you mind getting hit in the mic?
No, not at all. I'd appreciate it.
Oh, no, you got to actually say the words. The mic is yours.
Oh, my bad. The mic is yours.
In some form or fashion, half of you are locked in some prison. Be it your husband or your wife or maybe just your way of living. Some of you right now in here are locked up by the spirit of fear, especially the women whose husbands have been beating them for years. To the point where she doesn't even shed tears. She becomes immune to his doom, so she dances to his tunes as she patiently waits for the music to start. And even though her eyes are swelled, she knows how well he plays her piano in the dark. And while she sings soprano, she'll sing until she feels good. Leave? She should. She probably would if she could, but she thinks breaking up her family is a sin, so she remains locked in. She's a mental 8x10. But what about a few good men, the ones who are constantly pushed away from day to day to one day, only foolishly realizing that he's better off gay? I mean, he couldn't get love at home, so he asked a brother for a hug through brotherly love, looking for affection, and realized that both of them had erections. And through male bonding, they made their own directions. And this was caused by the strife of an unloving wife, both of them are now stereotyped in the world's 8x10. What about a mother and father's greatest treasure? Like a child, dragged through drastic measures of peer pressure, hoping that their friends don't close the door on their 8x10. And if so, you as a parent live long enough to receive the remains that society's already predicted their end, and that 8x10. What about that job? You know, the one you gave all your blood, sweat, and tears, and you still got the same title after 40 years, and you were scared to get fired because you were hoping to retire, and no one mentioned there is no pension. The hope gets it thin while you're in your 8x10. And them dope boys, they usually die often, and the reality of their 8x10 is usually a coffin or in hell. Coughing from the smoke, the devil produces a slow choke, inflicting wrath on his ghetto bad family, leaving them broke with lots of dope and no hope. But newsflash, this just is. The Reverend has committed seven deadly sins, but he's been acquitted from his 8x10, because he let the devil in, and he's been doing half the choir in, and tricking with lesbians, and keeping secrets from the deacons, but the Reverend is human too. I'm quite sure he's got his reasons. You see, the two answers to wait on faith, but faith works, but faith without works is dead works. Patience hurts. Even the darkness has its perks. If you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. And it was the power of prayer that got Jonas out of the whale. He had enough belief to make Mary hell. Just like him, I lay still in the belly of the beast. I've been arrested, but I can't be digested because I'm protected by him. And my 8x10 whisper loudly.
Man, this piece so dope. You have a thing for that, CJ and Doug?
Man, look, I can't lie. I'm speechless. Like, there was actually a breath of fresh air. I've inhaled probably from the first time since you cued me in. Yeah.
Brother, why did you write that piece?
I wrote that piece sitting behind bars in an 8x10 cell. And I thought about how many people were locked up that were not locked up, if that makes sense.
Oh, man.
And there's so many people who are locked up by so many other things besides a cell, an 8x10 cell. So whatever that may be, that is your 8x10. You know, some people are locked in relationships. Some people are stuck in relationships. Some people are stuck in jobs. Some people are stuck trying to get their kids to act right. Some kids are trying to, you know, so many.
Right.
Yeah.
So I actually got that feeling, man, that this right here could have been like a whole life series. Every dimension
yeah.
of your life, you know what I'm saying, could be locked into something, even when you're locked into good things.
Oh, yeah.
Brother, do you have anything else for CJ and Joe?
I just want to know that through all that you have gone through throughout your life to this point right now, is there anything that you regret?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I just told Jay within the last few days, like, throughout the course of my last situation, there were many days where I was just like, I wish this never happened. I wish that never happened. I would have continued to repeat the same cycle had I not experienced my last situation. You know, my first situation was actually the first situation that was physical. And when that situation,
hey,
it was physical, it was mental also, but that one was physical. And I just jumped out the
CJ, though? I think you might have another device open near you, and it's reverberating, and it's making it so we can't hear you.
Actually, I don't. I have no idea what's going on.
No, I hear her clearly. All right, there wasn't no reverb on your end, Tim?
Hello?
I'm sorry about that, but we were missing so much of what you were saying that I had to come in between it. Please forgive me.
Oh, no problem.
All right, you may continue.
Basically, I was just, you know, saying that my last situation, okay, so to answer his question, my first situation was a physical situation, and I was only in that situation for 2 or 3 years, but I recovered from that situation overnight, especially maybe because I was younger. But, you know, it was hard, you know, you just get up under somebody else, right? But my last situation, it wasn't physical at all. It was all mental. And that was the situation that made me go, wait a minute, something is not right here. And I feel like that stopped me from repeating, because each of my relationships, oh, I call them sagas, okay? Every saga was just a remake of the version before. You know, I've been married 3 times and divorced 3 times. And what I did was I was like, okay, well, this guy was from the streets. Maybe I need, you know, a different type of guy. So I still wanted a guy that was strong, that was a leader. And so I got with a military guy. And he was so controlling. When I left him, it was like, oh, yeah, I need somebody that's more laid back. And he didn't give a what about nothing. And so I realized that basically what I was doing was I was surfing the surface. You know, I was switching up what was on the surface, because at the core, they were all, just like me, raised by people who were toxic or emotionally unavailable, which kind of plays into what you were saying before. You know, I got into the topic of slavery. Our people, a lot of them are very much emotionally unavailable. And a lot of the things that we do when we raise our children is just repeat the practices that, this is how I was raised. So this is how my mama raised me. This is how my father raised me. And it's not right. You know, like, I didn't even know with my older children that I was supposed to be like, hey, baby, how was your day? Have talk at dinner. You know, I had no clue. And I was so young when I had them, too. You know, I really thought that I was doing something, because even though, you know, I would want to be with my friends sometimes and, you know, go out and club and everything, like, I was choosing to be a mother. Like, okay, I got to get a place. Okay, I got to pay my bills. I got to make sure there's food on the table. I got to have clothes on their back, you know. I had to hustle. And sometimes, you know, because their father, you know, he, when we split up, you know, I asked him, like, hey, the baby's teething. We need some teething medicine. And he was like, oh, you left me, and now you want some teething medicine? Like, you're going to have to suffer, thing for you. But it wasn't me who suffered. You know, really, it was our children, you know, who suffered. So I just say that to reiterate, you know, what we were saying before, like with the media and the girls having no esteem, and the men, our men are emotionally, they're not men. You know, I'm not against a man crying if he hurt, if he lost his family, if he hurt himself. A man shedding tears is not weak to me. But a man, you know, oppressing his family, putting his hands on his woman, you know, going to shoot you because you looked at him the wrong way, he is emotionally weak.
You there, Brother Tim?
No, I think you disconnected him.
I'm
when
sorry,
you said
I'm
I had
recoiled. I agree 100% that the gentleman is, that man that does that is definitely weak or whatsoever. You know, my motto is, if I got to beat you, I don't need you. Me, I was a 5-year domestic violence advocate in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I've met some extraordinary women that have gone through some horrific things, and I was able to create a lot of great material from their stories and things of that nature. My motto is, if I gotta beat you, I don't need you. And no man should find reason to put his hands on a woman to hurt her or whatsoever. If you feel you got to do that, leave, walk away, leave. It's going to be better for you in the long run, you know.
Yeah, physical abuse can work on both ends also.
Oh, yeah.
Things that I deal with my sons, because I'm the mother of 8 sons. And I have 4 of them, about to be 5, coming into adulthood, right? Well, actually, almost 6 of them are fully grown. When they were younger, they were trained in MMA, mixed martial arts, you know. And so they all, especially, it started with my oldest son, because my first 2 children were girls. And so I was really harsh with him. Because, you know, growing up, it was me and my mother in 7. I'm sorry.
Was that something?
It was me and my mother. And 7 years later, my sister came. And so my house was a house of women because my sister's father was in and out. And my mother and my sister's father, they fought. And they fought to the point where, you know, my mother, she had... Actually, my mother had 5 brothers, but my mother wasn't one to call her brother. She came from a line of abused women, and her sister under her had made a decision that they wasn't going out like that. So this is what I saw. And so the dynamics of a man hitting a woman, what I taught my sons, when I taught them martial arts, one of the things they learned was jujitsu, you know, moves. You can subdue a woman. You're physically stronger. You're bigger. Hold her. And I tell my sons all the time, there's no reason you should ever have to put your hands on a woman. And up until recently, I would tell them, you got sisters, because I have 6 daughters, and I have my bonus children. But you also got a mother. So there's no reason you got to ever put your hands on somebody's daughter, because I don't want anybody's daughter putting their hands on my son or vice versa. Nobody's son putting their hands on my daughter. But this is what comes from home, because, you know, I've had children with men who were like, you know, I'm not the brought out. And I didn't know this, you know, coming forward that, you know, this was wrong, because, you know, the way that I was raised, my mother fought back. It took me getting older and understanding that the way that we were created, men are degrees stronger than women physically. And so with that knowledge, I decided that if I train my son where, you know, he can defend himself, he can block. She's swinging, he can block. There's no need for him to spit on her and bust her in the face and all that. But really, not to switch it up on you guys, the topic has mostly been physical abuse. I think the deepest thing that we got to understand is our men, a lot of them think that they are good men because they are not physically abusive. But most of us women, and what you see that we're dealing with, it's not because we've been hit. We're not staying because we're physically afraid. It's the mental manipulation that a lot of the times goes into play with abuse that keeps them stuck. It's the mental, you know, play where you just, and the emotional abuse that keeps them stuck. And that's something that we really need to address, because your black eye can heal in a month, tops, okay? You will be years out of the situation, and you'll hear a song or you'll see something that reminds you of something that this man did, and you're in tears. Because somebody you love, you care for, you gave your all, betrayed you. Because it's a flex if he can get you, you know, and your best friend to fall out, because even slept with your best friend, or, you know what I'm saying, whatever it is that, you know, these young men think makes the men not, you know, nowadays. Like, I have to even tell my daughters, like, you know, my daughters, I've been blessed to have, you know, beautiful daughters, and I have to tell them, like, my daughters are addressed in my house, and my sons are addressed as beautiful, as handsome, you know, as smart, as kind. Hey, beautiful, how's your day? Hey, handsome, can I have a hug? Because nobody, no man will be able to approach my children like I was approached, and they hear handsome and beautiful, and they melt because they never heard that before. Because their esteem is shocked, because they got no idea what they're working with. And I tell my children, you know, you have to be careful of those people. But, hey, queen, let me open your door, queen, because they don't want you to treat you like a queen. There are so many out there who want you to be like, yeah, I hit that. Yeah, you see that one over there with that long hair? You know, those green eyes, I hit that. And a lot of them want to leave you with a baby. They're going to put their mark on you, and they don't even want to take care of that baby. They just want to put a claim on you as if you are property. You know, it's like
hey, we got more to come. Hey, Tim, I need you to go ahead and let people know where they can find you at, man.
You could definitely find me on Spotify, iHeartRadio, iTunes under my album is Genesis 116. And you can also find me on Instagram under Timothy Whispers Flame, Facebook under Timothy Whispers. And, you can always find me on Clubhouse with the Small House of Poetry. And that's it.
Hey, y'all need to go out there and cop Timothy's stuff. Y'all heard a track from him, and y'all heard him do a piece live. The man, he has two speeds, all out and ridiculous. Check him out. It'll be well worth the purchase. Hey, Tim, we appreciate you coming in here, man.
Oh, thank you, man. I'm honored, man, to be here.
Brother, much love to you.
All right.
All right. We're going to bring in another. No, we're going to go to a quick commercial there, CJ and Doe. Is that cool with you?
Oh, no doubt.
So if you got to go ahead and grab some water or something like that, anything like that, bring some back for two. You guys, and no three, because we're about to bring a person in here. And that's how we're going to do it today. Hey, this right here is a huge honor. Thank you for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Mama used to flare her hands with a Jedi stance and blow. She was like a storm. Thunder would flash when her tongue would go. So I ran as fast as my little feet could go. And I would run. So many sounds would touch me as I traveled to and fro. Scents would hug my hips and douse me with dreary scents. I would be so hungry, hungry for many things. Enticed by the dance that would occur between Sylvia and Ronald on Wicker Street. They would barely speak, just run hands down the thigh meat. Place their wings on each other like angels. They were so immaculate with their sincerity. Her deep chocolate would wrap around his tall, toffee physique. I was enamored by their dance. So delicate and divine with her feet. So sturdy and muscular his hide. And they would collide on the withering side of wicker street. To and fro, my tender feet would graze the concrete. And I would pass by the Boricuas, or as they would say, Boricuas, Tatiana and Abel with the fleet. The Rodriguez family on Staten Road, they had their own rhythm. Their song was laughter and colloquial banter, slapping dominoes on mahogany. They wore with warmth on their tongues their color-form seeds, growing cilantro and rosy-cheeked babies. And I would peek my head, coiled to perfection, seeking their elder son, Gabriel. Gabriel, who won my little fragile heart. It would morph into butterflies when he would smile, teeth so bright it reflected starlight. His dimples emerged like craters on the moon. His sweat from rough housing was like perfume. And a year sometime, maybe during the month of June, when summer's plumes were steady to bloom, he kissed me like pollen to bees. He kissed me like soil to earth. He kissed me like sap to trees. And we were one. And we were the cool to breathe. I miss him. Loud as the sound of thunder striking oak, their music on Staten was no joke. To and fro, my little feet turned demure. My toothless smiled and matured, and instead of dodging Mama's chatter, I walk with depth in my stride, and education was my motivation, and I wore it dang near with pride. See, I left 6414 Bridgemont Road, yet its smell, sound, sachet, dive, simmer sweet, sentimental treats never, ever left me. I can still hear its rhythm. Can you?
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Love Savvy with Bridgemont Road. Savvy is dope. She can sing and she can kill that poetry. DJ Doe, how you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, this is what we be doing over here on the Epiphany side. And then we also have the Small House side, me and Gina from over there at Small House. This merger that we've done with Epiphany, though, has been great. You know, it's been giving us another outlet, another platform. My brother For Real has been just off the chain. Good dude. There's a lot of good people over here at Epiphany.
What's that? I got a good thing going on over there. You've been trying to entice me with it for a good minute now.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's one thing about Small House. Popularity don't really mean nothing with us. We do, though. Good people do, though. We about to go ahead and bring in this next caller here. Let's go ahead and see what's shaking and baking over here on this side over here. All right, let's go ahead and see what this 815 do. See what that 815 do. You got your hand up, 815.
I do. I couldn't find the mute. I rarely use this phone. Hey, Jay.
All right. How are you doing tonight?
Wouldn't be me.
And
if
let
I didn't,
everybody
I didn't
know who this is.
It wouldn't be me if I didn't call in and not unmute myself. This is Gina Storm. And that's my partner, Just Jay. And I'm glad he did this pop up because today's a good day.
Man,
pleased to
y'all
meet
had
you.
Some good weather there in Joliet. Not Joliet, not Juliet.
I don't know what you're talking
Joliet.
About. Yeah,
at least y'all did from the weather that I heard yesterday.
Yeah, it's always something. You know, we used to it. It don't even bother me no more.
What do you think about the teacher that we had, I mean, the interviewee? That we have.
Well, first I want to say it's nice to meet you and to hear your poetry and just to get a look into what it's been like for you, raising your children, getting married and divorced. I only got 2 ex-husbands under my belt, and it's not a competition. I'm just saying. Ooh. I'm not hoping to get a third, but I know how that goes.
Well, first, let me say thank you and pleased to meet you, too. I've heard so much about you, all good things. And, I thought third time was a charm. I thought I had it in the bag, but it went left. Yes, I mean, you're talking about hell with gasoline draws on. I didn't make it real quick.
Really sorry. Woo!
Yes, indeed.
Well, I guess when you're going to do it wrong, you might as well do it all the way, so...
Yes, indeed. And you know what? Before it slips my mind, because it happens a lot. You know, I'm still trying to get back on track. You were second in the lineup, and I gotta say that was dope. It was fire. You know, the first one woke me up, and then I heard yours, and I was like, okay, I got. You know what? Let me look and see what I got. Something's going on here. And JSL, he's been trying to make me sit. And I was like, no, I don't do that anymore.
That's why I ain't
but
asked
you. Y'all set me on fire tonight. That should be it.
That's good stuff. That's why we do this. Being a PJ is one of the best things that ever happened. Honestly, plain spoken word tracks instead of music makes poets feel some type of way. They want to hear themselves like that. When I hear my own voice, I zone. So I actually took my earbuds off and walked away from the phone. I don't be listening to myself, but I do listen to other people, and they inspire me. So, yay.
Yes. See, now I feel like I fit right in because I'm notorious, we sound so different. When you hear ourselves, Jay, I did something before, and he sent me a recording, and I was like, oh, why would you send me that? I don't want to hear that. I can listen to everybody on there but myself.
Yeah, listening
Gina,
to you know what? I think some people aren't bothered by it, but the fact that you're bothered by it as well makes me feel good because you never want to be that one, you know.
Yeah.
We in this together. Go ahead, Jay. You had a question?
I was asking, what did you bring in for us today? We're going to chop it up with you afterwards. We don't have a lot of hands up, but we do got to get in to one more person before he get angry with me because he just heard what I said because my mic is unmuted.
There you go.
I guess we got to go ahead and bring him on in here the minute you get done with this poem, sir.
Okay. Well,
oh, man, that's
give me
a dog whistle in
the
half.
I'm just pull a robbery. I'll be in and out.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and let the interviewee go ahead and give you the mic.
And you have the mic. Mic is yours.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I titled this I'm Done. I met and I kissed you, and it was fun. For a little while, we dated and explored the possibility of us. Then I learned this was a well-taught lesson. See, I'm done. And it's been one. I gotta go. I might be pickier than most women, but that's because I'm amazing. Liars and gaslighting, love bombers, joy robbers, They're a dime a dozen, baby. They everywhere. Seen you. Actually married you before, but I won't do it anymore. I look in the mirror when I see myself to remind myself of my worth, so that I don't kiss another frog, another bum, another jerk. Just put myself in a better situation, and that's factual. I'm not bragging because I deserve real love. This is the opposite of that, and you're an asshat. I'm simply prepping you because you're not ready. Well, maybe you are, but for someone less than, who doesn't care anything about themselves, has low self-esteem and very needy and clingy, she'd probably be your perfect match, but you don't want her. You want me, so I'm sorry. You're not going to be able to be prepared for this because I'm already mentally disconnected and totally over it. So I cured the curse and took the chain off, and it's been removed. I'm not worried about the lock or the key because they've been melted away and turned into a reminder bracelet so I can look at it every day and tell myself what not to do again. I told you before, I'm done. But that's okay because I didn't know any better. See, I used to wish that there was a handbook, a way that you could give a sneak peek, introduce yourself to new people gradually, and then I would spoon feed you this delectable meal, and you could get the best thing that you ever had, for real. But a fair exchange isn't something that you could steal, and I'm too much for the weak or those who have hesitated to speak, but yet you always want to say that I'm difficult and mouthy. Oh, my. Make that make sense. How, Sway? See, I won't dumb or water down my speech, not my vocabulary, my cadence, or my speed. While speaking, most say that I am speaking too fast. Nah, I think you were just listening slow. Or maybe what I was putting down wasn't for you. It's okay, because I still got to go. I will pray that you'll be able to deal and not become jumping out of the bushes and corners of dark places trying to catch me in something like, I'm cheating on you, but we're not together, see? This was never really a relationship. It was more an entanglement. And I hated the fact that I even put myself through that. Did I mention before that I'm done? One of my exes said that when you lose me, you really do suffer a loss. Sorry that he felt that way. I'm sure you will, too. Because actually, this is what I do. I'm healing myself from the infliction of the wounds that I put myself through because I already knew better. I already had one of you. I can't do it again. I'm done. I'm just going to let my team cry because I've done enough already. I don't know why I put myself through this so many times. I just feel like this right here is my best glow up. I ain't even mad. I'm just done. I'm Gina Storm. Thank you for indulging me. That's my piece.
I'm about to get my I'm in here snapping. I'm about to get my lighter out my face. I gotta put my lighter.
hold on. Let me get my lighter. Let's go.
I'm in here snapping. Like, I had to mute my phone, make sure you couldn't hear my snaps. Like, what?
Was that freestyle?
Yeah, I was supposed to record it with my other phone, but I got so caught up in it, I forgot to hit record. So I'm going to listen to the playback.
You're going to have to look at it from the playback.
Damn.
Yeah, you missed that one, man.
Every now and then I get freestyle, so I just, you know how it goes.
Are you trying to get away from freestyling?
No, but that one was in the chamber. Like, sometimes it's appropriate, and other times I have a piece that actually fits, you know, whatever the topic is, and I prefer to pull that one out, and maybe I'll add some spice from something that's happening currently in my life, but for the most part...
I heard you say, I don't want to be pigeonholed.
Because
I'm understanding the
form of freestyle spoken word artist. I want people to know that I'm a poet, too, so I have to read some of my poetry.
I ain't never know what that meant. I thought it was a person freestyling or what may have it. I thought it was still in that category, but yeah.
Maybe that's just
in my notebook. Yeah. So when you pick a name, you're supposed to pick a name that reflects who you are. And I understood you were introduced to Gina Storm, but I did not expect that. I did not expect that.
Oh.
Storm.
Unpredictable. There you have it.
just blew my socks off, okay?
Look, I didn't even know. I didn't know what I was going to do. So I'm glad you were here for it. I'm glad I was here for it. Everything that you said, like I said, a lot of that resonated in my poem because a lot of that is my, that's my story. Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. So,
man. Gina, what do you have going on?
What do I have going on in terms of?
As far as Epiphany, Small House, you know, any of that type of stuff, if you got anything going on. You know,
where one can be found, yes. So one can find Gina Storm wherever there's poetry, but specifically at 2 Central, 3 Eastern. Is that right?
I think it's 1,
at
2.
It's 1, yes. It's 1 and 2. At 1 Central, 2 Eastern in the kitchen where we do speed round after round, and try to get full by the time we get to step away from the table. Everybody has the itis, poetry style. 1 3-minute poem after another. Let's see. You can also find me in the living room, the Small House of Poetry, where Jess Jay will have people sitting on the comfy couch like he has you right now. And we just discuss poems and get to know the poets individually if it's an open mic. And if it's an interviewee, you know, we go real deep. But anybody can bring a poem, even if it's not a whole piece. You're working on something. Just want listening ears for, this is what I got so far, what y'all think. Sometimes we all see something different in a piece, and we can all give you something that you can take away with that and then do what you will with it. And then feel free to bring it back because we're going to put you on the couch and do it again in the living room at 6 Central, 7 Eastern on Sunday evenings. On Monday morning, we have the AIM Drive, which is a morning start your week, start your day, get your shock of aquifer caffeine.
Get your mind right.
Yes. Get that act right. Get that voice right. Get your temperament right. I always say, ooh, no coffee, no talkie. So I drink my coffee and I tune in. And we have conversations, questions, facts that are black, all 366 this year because it's a leap year, but 365, we are always black, so we're going to always have a black fact. We have quote of the day, what's in your cup, how's the weather, and where the hell are you calling in from? So it's just it's a good time. It's a good time to be had. It's a good way to start your week. We have a mini speed round of poetry rather than a music break. So, yeah. Get your feel with that. And just Jay and I have we're the PJs, so we're poem jockeys, and you can catch us on a Saturday very soon coming up here at Epiphany, as you are in this pop-up this Tuesday. I'm so glad to have made your acquaintance. Thank you. That's
Thank
you, can
you
find
and
me
it was
Jay.
A pleasure sharing the mic with you.
Jay, you came in here, and you went rare form on them, man. I was like, like, where's she going?
Hey,
hey. Like Goku, man.
Oh, my goodness. Have you seen back in the day of the cartoon when the Wonder Twins would activate their powers in the shape of? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Like she hit him high and I hit him low. Let's go, girl. I'm here for it. Oh, yeah. I think the greatest part of this is when you become self-aware and you know what your accountability is, how you got set up in these terrible situations and how you got out of it and how you just thrive because of it. It's a beautiful thing. So I'm here for it.
Wait. Appreciate you for stopping. We're probably going to get these mics back open again, Gina. We're going to see how the UE is doing. But if you want to hang around, man, we definitely got you.
I will hang. One love, one mic.
Much love to you.
Likewise.
How you holding up, DJing, though?
I'm speechless. And you know my mouth be running. She got me in my thoughts. Like,
yeah, she's a dope poet. She's been doing it for a minute, done a lot of appearances and stuff like that. So it's, she does it effortlessly. It's almost like a style that look like it. That's not a style. Oh, that is a style. And then she just be killing it. My thing is, I don't know how she do her setups. Her setups be kind of far out, and then she go ahead and bring it in there. She don't forget about none of them setups. She always bring them back in.
Right. It was definitely a pleasure and an honor to have her grace tonight. That's what's up.
It was. We got another person in here. We're going to go ahead and get them in here in the lineup. Hey, Divine Inspiration, what you think of the interviewee here, sir?
Let me tell you, my brother, I've been sitting here just like jumping from joy for the way this show has transpired thus far tonight. Excuse me one second.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We appreciate you, sir.
Hey, man,
I love your vision. I love to hear you come in.
Guys, excuse me.
This young lady right here is a dynamo.
I'm in the motel down in a hotel in Virginia. You know, we had a family situation. I had to come down for it. So it's a little chaotic, but that's okay. I'm here tonight. I heard your feature of this evening, Jane Doe, once before. I can't remember exactly where it was that I heard it performed. And it was just like really... eye-opening moment, the transparency, the love, the concern, and the wholeness of the piece that she spit. You know, you could tell she was bearing her soul, and I really appreciated that about her. And I wasn't disappointed this evening thus far either. Your pen is profound, Queen, and I appreciate being able to share the platform with you this evening.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, Mr. MC, I have a question for you, if I may.
Yes,
could I
kind
of twist things around, and instead of asking a question of your feature, might I pose a question to her or ask her for her thoughts on this?
Yes, sir, as long as she agrees.
Yes, sir, as long as she agrees.
I'm fine.
The reason I'm asking... The reason I'm asking this is that your story, your some of your poetry portrays a love of self, a love of your people, the type of story and victories that would inspire some of our youth, particularly our young ladies, from some of the things that I've heard you say. And I just wanted to pose a hypothetical question to you, if I might. What advice would you give to a young queen at that, you know, that pivotal point in life, you know, 15, 16, 17 years old? What advice would you give a young queen, knowing what you've been through, to maybe empower her for her walk from this point forward?
My first piece of advice would be to seek knowledge. If you don't know something, don't be afraid to ask. Don't assume. And to listen. Because as a young lady coming up, I found myself in many situations because I thought I knew already what life
was. Hey, Paul, you have to mute your mic.
Gotcha.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry about that.
No problem. I thought I knew, and then there really wasn't people around educating me on how life really was. So I had to learn through trial and error. So my advice to the younger people is to seek knowledge and to listen. And my advice to the older people is don't assume. You know, when I first started my journey, if I read a book and I gained knowledge, I don't know why, I just somehow thought that it would rub off on my children, that they knew. And they don't. You have to teach them, which is, you know, why I'm trying not to do the same disservice to the younger children, because my older children had to grow up, you know, with me. And it's a good thing that you asked me that, because when I turned 18, I was the mother of three children. And they were the product of an abusive relationship. And as a young girl, I watched plenty of TV, so I was going to have a white picket fence and Prince Charming and be married before my children and all of those things. And I used to say I was not going to have a relationship like my mother had. I was not going to get with a man who beat me. But what my mind never told me was that she did not get with a man who beat her. She got with a man who she thought was Prince Charming, because that's who he portrayed himself, you know, to be. And so the most important thing that you can do as a young lady is, you know, go ask questions of someone you trust. And if it's someone who's willing to talk to you, listen. And even if you don't agree with everything that they say, you have to learn to do what we say and leave the bone. Take what benefits you, and you have to leave the rest. But what you cannot do is assume that you already know.
Thank you for that. That was most profound and well thought out response. Something, it pointed out a few points to myself that I need food for thought for myself, so I appreciate that response point.
I mean, one of the steps to problem solving, there's a process to problem solving, and the first step, you know, is to gather the data. When you make an assessment, you know, based off the data that you have. And I was working with absolutely nothing because I was young. You know, I had experienced some things in my young life. People told me that I was, you know, mature for my age. So to me, that meant that I knew about life, and I knew nothing compared to what I know now, and I'm still learning. You know, life is a steadily process of learning. I think when you're not learning, you're there, you know, maybe. But, yeah, you definitely have to seek knowledge. You have to seek knowledge. It's out there, and it's not hard to find, especially, you know, now. The Internet, pretty much you can find anything that you're looking for. You know, you can find out what is emotional abuse, how to identify an emotional abuser, you know, how do people get into toxic relationships, how do you leave a toxic relationship. Everything pretty much is at your fingertips. You know, Google is there for more than just finding out what Beyonce and Quavo and, you know, what's his name, Chris Brown got going on. Google can also be a lifeline if you use it, you know, correctly.
Awesome. Words of wisdom, definitely. Thank you, Queen. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
Hey, Paul.
Sorry.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
Brother, man. What do you have going on in the Epiphany universe, sir?
Well, I have the Inspiration Factory every Sunday night, 8 p.m., which, of course, is poetic praise, if that's what you, if you will. We have a profanity-free platform where we praise God through poetry, song, testimony, prayer requests, whatever, you know. And it's 8 p.m., same bat channel, same bat station. Epiphany, the For Real Entertainment Network, with myself and my partner in praise, Mr. Alonzo, calling up from California. So you got both sides of the state represented there.
I see you got it on lockdown.
I see
there, Paul.
You got it on lockdown. We're trying to do a little something. You know, and I did just happen to finish a piece that I think might just be appropriate for tonight.
Cool. With that being said, sir,
the mic is yours. Thank you, King. It's called Can You Guess? And all that is known and unknown of what we know or think we know of Earth, there are undiscovered treasures, too many to contemplate. probably just as many treasures smack dab in your face. Enough to make poverty out of King Solomon and Job's total combined worth. Treasures surpassing Einstein, Plato, the Wright brothers, and all the rest you hold in high esteem. Treasures that have been depressed, discouraged, and programmed to prevent them from achieving their fear of that treasure attaining a wealth that this present-day world has never seen. This treasure possesses a uniquely rare true speaking to the entire human race. I'm speaking to those who have forgotten the glory from which they came. I'm speaking to those who never knew the truth. I'm speaking to the spiritually strong and to those who for the moment are weak. Reality must at some time be erased, minus the lies, deception, hate, and all the bullwhips that we all allow to take place. Men, we have failed our queens, allowed the enemy to have us do his job for him. Ladies, you're equally guilty in this, for you accepted, in some cases embraced, being less than. Then into our stale falling from grace and slurped it up as a pig and its slop, looking like a please disrespect me slob, allowing me to be your current whim. After hearing this tidbit of my thoughts, can you guess who it is that I address? I suppose to this I must digress, because words of life now seem to result in or praise death, and vice versa. It's somewhat ethereal, but is the proper path? How should it be deciphered? Which is the right way to go? And in truth and in all transparency and honesty, I do not at times know that I know. One thing for certain, and two things for sure. This is one thing that I certainly do know. I can't remember falling and quote-unquote unfairly obtaining, and a whole lot more when solo was how I flowed. And praise God, I can also remember when he was the inspiration guiding my life. And hindsight shows how through him I glowed. The unspeakable value of the most precious, most valuable, most perfect display of his love originated as I, Adam, God's first human creation. Each and every ethnicity, race, tribe, or breed of human being came from that original man. It's in your DNA. And you should be, and should you be so blessed to be of the melanated, you too have forgotten from whence thou hast cometh. Listen to the call of your soul, the voice of the ancestors' past. Recognize the degree of our falling. Forgive, foresee, and bring to fruition our restoration. When we unite and follow what has been imbued upon us from birth, we alone may stem the tide of destruction of life as we know it. It may be us, up to us to remember our righteous origination and save the Nubian nation. And in doing so, save all of the earth. Poem.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about right there. And you know, you always ever the gentleman too, man, because I sure have forgot to go ahead and get you the mic properly, brother. I appreciate you and all the things that you do, man.
We're here for each other. This is a platform where iron sharpens iron. We're not here to do anything but to uplift and allow wisdom to be shared amongst ourselves. Iron sharpens iron, baby boy. That's what we do around these here parts.
You got a little cowboy in you too, from up there in Philly. Well, I don't know what. Oh, I forgot. That's what.
I'm in Virginia right now. I'm in Virginia. Okay.
Brother, how are you holding up behind all that? You good?
Hey, I'm not holding up, but I'm being held up.
All right. Well,
I'd have been on the ground, but I'm being held up by angels. You know, I won't strike my foot on the rock. My God is here with me.
Man, do you want to go ahead and leave the sister with any parting words?
I appreciate all that I've heard from Jane Doe, and I just encourage her to keep strong to her path, to her calling. Follow your heart, because apparently it's not steering you wrong. You're such a source of inspiration for those others who have been through some things in life that may not have all the answers. You actually included me into a few things tonight, so I appreciate that too. Just stay true to your calling, Queen.
You there,
Yeah, I'm here. I don't know if you could hear me before. I was trying.
Nope.
Something was going on with the connection. I couldn't hear. It sent you a, personal message, but maybe you didn't see it. It kind of just went out on my end where I missed everything.
It
was probably like the first
too.
Four or five lines.
All right. But I tell you what, Paul, man, we appreciate you coming in. Y'all go check out Paul over there on Sunday. Hey, what time are you over there, Paul?
8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Go over there and check out Paul. Paul, just like you heard tonight, it's Paul, the school of the birds. Man, we appreciate you for coming in here, brother.
It's definitely been my pleasure, my honor. You know, so I'm going to step on over to the lounge and chill out with the rest of the others. God bless you all. One love, one mic.
Take care, brother. I can't even mute you, Paul, because it's only showing that me and Jane Doe is on the air.
I'll mute my mic.
Can you even... Still, like, can you hear me good? Because it's the connection is like, I can hear you, but I just heard crackling in the air. Like, I lost everything.
Yeah, yeah, it's over with now.
Okay.
Man, you know what? One thing I've been noticing about you is that why in the hell are you so balanced? after everything you've even been through, and the twists and the turns, and you're still trying to find the humanity on both sides of this divide. That, well, I guess it's not really a divide. You know, they say it's a divide there, but I don't think that it should be. People behave like it is, but how have you been managing to stay impartial like you have been?
Balance, you say. one of the reasons why I'm kind of really silent, I'm disappointed, because I can see when he started his piece, he went into spirituality.
Right.
And that's where I can relate, you know, like that's my footing. And battle with
talk to
spirituality.
Us about that if you don't mind.
I'm sorry?
I said, talk to us about that if you don't mind.
Well, I battle with my spirituality now. I know that when I came, I'm Muslim, and when I came into Islam, I studied for a couple of years first, and I came in comfortable, you know, like not for a man, not for a call. Like I believe, okay, what I was learning was the true calling, and I was, you know, like I'm with this, right? And so, you know, they say if you find your man at the club, you can expect the chaos. But I found my man from our place of worship. And so the downside to that is, you know, who were spiritual abusers. As a young lady, you know, I would see women leave the faith after a bad marriage. And I would be amongst them who critique those young ladies, like, that's why you don't come into the religion for no man. You know, that's why you don't do A, B, C, D. You know, it's about you and God. Well, I came in strictly about God. You know, I like what Islam taught. Like, Islam says, hey, we don't lower the stature of Jesus, or we say Isa, peace and blessings be upon him. It said we just put the creator of mankind on a, you know, higher level. And I was like, okay, I'm with that. But after I dealt with those men and, the way that they would use the religion, I had a growing resentment for the religion and didn't even realize that that was what was going on. You know, for instance, last guy, whenever it was time to talk about something, it was like, oh, look at the time. I got to go pray. And generally, it might take him 30 minutes to 45 minutes to go pray and come back. But now he went and prayed and stopped at the store and went here. And then when he comes back, it's 5 minutes till it's time for him to pray again. Or, you know, now he want to get, you know, haughty, like, you're trying to hold me up from prayer. And I would just be like, God, you know, I'm trying to talk to my husband and resolve these issues. And, you know, he got to go. You know, like, I'm kind of rambling because I feel guilty. You know what I'm saying, that I even let my situation with him interfere with my religion.
What was your
but
state before happened. You? What was your state before you had went to Islam?
So I was raised, okay, pretty much my mother had a religious background. You know, her father's brothers were ministers and pastors. My mother's brother, you know, as a minister, my grandmother was into the church. My mother, not so much. We were like Easter, New Year's, that type of thing. Well, as a young girl, sometimes my aunt would watch me. And when my aunt would watch me, she would take me to church. When I was with my grandmother, I would go to church. And I always found myself as a young girl searching for, you know, God. I knew that there was a higher power. And so my aunt took me to church. I had to be about five. Yeah, I was definitely five. I hadn't turned six yet. And they were calling the people to, you know, the front to who wanted to join the church. And I was asking my aunt, like, what's going on? And she was explaining. I was like, oh, well, I want to join. She was like, well, we'll have to talk to your mom. I can't let you do that. And so we got home. She told my mother. My mother talked it over with my grandmother, and they were like, I can do it. And so I got baptized just before I turned six. And then where we moved shortly after that, there was a church right at the corner that was growing and developing, doing things in the community center. And it would have a vacation Bible school, and it had a lunch program. And so I would go down to the vacation Bible school, the lunch program. And so the church that my aunt, my grandmother was involved in, they were Baptist. This church was Baptist. But my mother's brother, he was Church of God. And so he started when in the off season of the summer program, he would pick me and my friend up, and he would take us to Bible study at his church. And so I got to learn from the Church of God aspect as well as, you know, the Baptist aspect. But then my father, that's a story. But my father, in his household, there was no religion at all. But my grandparents and my father would not keep us from it. And so the church on the corner of their house was Church of God in Christ. And so if you wanted to go down there, we can, you know, go over there and check out the Church of God in Christ. And so this is all transpiring at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. By the time I got like 12, I went to my uncle, a different uncle. He was the minister. I'm sorry, the choir director. And I was like, I want to join the choir. And I told my grandmother, I want to go to church. And, you know, because I could sing. I was always in the chorus in school. And so they were like, all right, join the choir. And I did until I met my children's father. And then not so much. I think it had a lot to do with what was going on at the time with my children's father in the church. And so after him, I ended up meeting someone. We never dated or anything. We're just friends. I was actually getting off work at the laundromat, and I heard him and another brother having a conversation, and they were talking about Islam. And so I interjected because from my teachings, you know, how I was raised, I was like, multiple women, like, who y'all think y'all are? Like, what makes you think you deserve that? I'm sassy, right? Like, y'all, man, ain't enough to have multiple women. You don't run in my mouth. And so over the next 2 years, you know, he would share with me and teach me about the religion. And so, you know, I was like, okay, well, I want to go one day and, you know, check y'all out. And really, when I went and checked him out, I was like, oh, these people are nuts. I will never go back here. And I had my children with me, so I was like, yeah, we're going to be nice so we can go home in peace. Because there was this curtain, and the brothers had a side, and the sisters had a side, and there were still sisters there at that time. And so, you know, they weren't speaking English when they pray. I was like, I don't like this at all. On my ride home, they gave me a Quran and some other things, and was like, hey, when you get in the house, the first thing, you know, you want to read when you open this book is the opening. And but they told me the Arabic word for it, which was Al-Fatiha. And so me being me, I'm like, oh, I can remember that. You know, I didn't really remember, but I'm like, I'm just going to open the book to the strange name, right? And I got in there and opened, when I set up my children, I opened the book, and everything in that book was strange. So I said, you know what? I am going to just open the page, and whatever it is that you want me to see, Lord, guide me to it. And so that's what happened. I opened the page, and I read it, and then it lets me read more and more. And within the week, I was getting up on the bus, you know, catching a bus, going to the masjid, and then I did my conversion just after I turned 21. But, you know, like, I stayed in the Bible, even when I wasn't in Bible school. My mom, I didn't know you shouldn't, but at this time when I was growing up, my mother used to keep a Bible all over the house, and there was a little hand Bible in the bathroom, and I would be in the bathroom for hours just reading, not even using the bathroom, just reading, because I had so many questions. And I know, you know, I can ramble, so cut me off if you mean to, but I had so many questions about God and how he operated. And it was like, you know, why do, you know, if this God is just, if this God is caring, why does he let children die? And why does he let bad things happen to good people? And why does this happen? And why does that happen? And the irony, just to go back a second, when I was in the eighth grade, we had to write a paper. Sometimes I sit and ponder about was the prompt. And my eighth grade teacher, when I turned in mine was, sometimes I sit and ponder about whether there is a God. And so after she got this paper, she was like, are you atheist? I'm like, what's that? She said, do you believe in God? I'm like, well, yeah, but, you know, I'm trying to get an understanding. She was like, well, are you Christian? And I was like, no, I'm Baptist. And so they all were laughing, like, Christian, you know, is Baptist. I knew nothing about my religion. You know, I was reading, I didn't comprehend, and I was in the dark. And so what I would often do, because my mother and my father weren't spiritual, And when I would ask questions, I was that sassy kid, so they weren't always received the right way, you know. And so I would just sit there and say, you know what, God, you can hear me. You know, whether I feel like God is all-knowing, all-compassionate. So I felt like if I just went to God and said, listen, send me what's right for me. Guide me to where you want me to be, that he can hear me and he will respond. And so, you know, there was a period of my life where my guidance came through Baptist and college, you know, Catholic Church and God in Christ up here, where it came through Church of God. And since 1999, my faith has come through Islam. So.
Got you. Was there anything else that you want to go ahead and share before we go ahead and end the interview?
Well, I think I've kind of been all over the place this whole entire interview. But the main thing that motivated me to call in and to do this show, even though I didn't want to, is I want the people who are going through toxic relationships, especially when the wounds can't be seen, when it's a psychological or an emotional abuse or a spiritual abuse or even a financial abuse, I want them to know that there are people there who understand. Because during my journey, there were times that I would reach out to people, and sometimes your loved ones will give you advice, well-meaning advice, and it don't be right. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, our older folks would say, you know, so what, do you sleep around? If you're paying the bills, you stay. You know, okay, you know. Well, like TV told Harpo to beat, you know, his woman. There are elders who sometimes give you that advice, well-meaning, you know. You got to keep a man in the house for the children. I tolerate it so much throughout the years for the children that I lost myself. And my children now, my younger ones, they don't even know me when I was active in my community. You know, when I would go to the masjid this last year, my son was like, do you know what a masjid is? You've been to the masjid before? He was shocked because this is not how he knows me. But my other children, we stayed at the masjid. You know, just like a person would get up and dress their kids and take them to the park, take them out to eat, I would dress my kids, and we would go to the masjid, and we would study, and we would learn, and we would interact with, the community. There were so many things that we did that these children were forbidden from because my situation brought so much drama that even the masjid wasn't a safe space for them to be. So my point of going to all that is to say there are people who just don't understand. And sometimes you can ask for advice, and they'll tell you you're crazy. If you feel it in your bones, if you feel like something is wrong, don't let nobody tell you you're crazy. Don't let nobody tell you you're overreacting. Brother used to say, hey, you're crazy as Cooter Brown. Well, you can call me what you want to. I know that you're not supposed to be treating me like this. I know that I'm not supposed to feel this way. You're my husband. I married you for protection, and instead of protecting me, nobody has brought me in where my health fell and my hair fell out and my speech was suffering. I knew that it was my spouse and his demons who was bringing that to me. And everybody else was like, oh, no, he is a saint. He's not that guy. So there are people who do not know. They did not experience it. They don't have a clue. And we always say, well, if this happened to me, I'd do blah, 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 blah. You don't know what you will do until you are in that situation. So gratefully, through the grace of God.
Hey, I say that all the time. Even with situations that I go through them and I went through them, that I could see there was no better way to go through it. I always tell myself, if that situation come up again, I don't even know if I'll be able to go ahead and react like that. People are always saying what they're going to go ahead and do, and a lot of times when it comes down to it, it just be too much.
Yeah, and it's so crazy because, you know, when I first came in, my first year, people would say, I don't even know you, because people who knew me from my previous years before I converted, they knew I was wild. When I say wild, I was rowdy. I'm 4'11". I had a short complex for sure. You know what I'm saying? I felt like, you know, you weren't going to punk me. You know, if you was going to beat me up, oh, well, you couldn't say I didn't fight back. You know, like hey, it was what it was. And so I said that to say, I was a menace when I wanted to be. You know, I could act a fool. But when I came into Islam, I was like, que sera sera, Hakuna Matata, you know, all of those slogans, like, let it be. And I had to refine myself. It has to be a balance. Everything in life has its balance. There is no good without evil. You know what I'm saying? You cannot. Anybody. It's about self-preservation. I don't even want it because I know we got to wrap this up. But you have to do what you got to do. So it got to a point where I tried to divorce that man the right way. Under the religion, I tried to be patient. And it got to a point where I said, you know what, if something happened to me, this is what my children is going to be stuck with. And it was clear that he was going to look out for self before anybody. So I didn't know who would be raising my children or whatever. So it got to a point where I was like, okay, they're not going to divorce me. They think he is saint. I left my kids at home. As a matter of fact, I saw a bed bug, you know. That's how it could. But what I did was I got a place to stay on the low key in September, October. And I kept this place a secret until I gathered my finances because I didn't have the most money. And December, you know, I was like, oh, I saw a bed bug. And so I had everybody in the house packing up things, loading them up so that we could spray these bed bugs. And then I waited. So they went to the other lady. And I put my kids in a vehicle, and I followed that vehicle to the new house, and I sent them a message like, ain't no need in going back there, bro. We ain't there no more. And, you know, he tried to bully and intimidate and do all of these things. But once I got me and my kids in a safe space and I didn't have to worry about no backlash on them or no backlash on, you know, on me, it was like, whatever. So, look, you don't run nothing no more. And I even told my neighbors before I made the move, like, look, if anything happened to me, it was him. Don't let him fool you. It was him. I wrote notes. I left, you know, place. I had to take my power back. And so don't ever let anybody tell you that you're crazy. Fight back. And you got to be safe because these people will hurt you. We see it on TV all the time. Their emotional, you know, weakness, if they can't control you, they would hurt you before they let somebody else have you. Not all the time, but in those cases, you have to come up with a safe exit strategy. Don't be afraid to ask for help from somebody you can trust. And when I say that, I mean – be very, very, very careful. Because I had so many knives stuck in my back that I can't even count. You find out who your real people are when you're down, you know, on your knuckles. So with that, the rest is for another time. And thank you all. And thanks, Jay, for giving me the opportunity. And I'm going to shut my face.
No, this right here was, this was crazy right here. This is your first interview,
feel,
too,
no,
man.
I feel
right
brown,
baby.
Look, she didn't say anything this whole thing, but at the end, you know, she's like, hey. Like, no, she can't have him. Like, you take it.
Right. We had a good night of poetry and conversation. This right here, was it gave everything on all levels.
Indeed. And I thank you. And again, I want to say sorry to the brother who I didn't hear because I was really looking forward to it. I look for a spiritual boost wherever I can get them because, you know, I'm trying to get myself, you know, back together on track. I'm trying to maintain that, you know, that balance.
All right. The whole writer's block thing that was discussed in the beginning. Where do you think you at with that? You know, sometimes you got to go ahead and travel. You got to see a few things. You got to start breaking down some of the old things and the rest of that. Where are you at as far as your writer blocks travels?
So what I do is I have notes, and whenever something comes to my mind, I put them in the notes. But I found that whenever I try to sit down and go through old things, I'm triggered sometimes. So I can't do that. And then when I try to put things together, it's so much that one of the things that I came out that situation with was complex PTSD. And I already had.
What is that?
But it is, PTSD is like it's like shell shock. You know, soldiers get it from war, you know, in the Army. But what we don't know is that people right here in, you know, inner cities especially, we get PTSD at a higher rate than the soldiers do. Because what it is it's literally what it says it is, post-stress traumatic disorder, which means after the stress, you know, like after the event occurs. When you are being abused, you know, your body still feels the effect and the residual of that. And it puts your body in a state where, like, my body used to constantly release cortisol and adrenaline, which is, you know, kicked in when you're in your fight or flight. And it can be poisonous to your body when that's done on a constant basis. You know, it was a consistent basis where, like I said, it got to the point where I was having a lot of physical issues. You know, I had to get up and go to the hospital, you know, like, I'm gonna go back. I digress. PTSD is not just in the military. It happens whenever somebody has been exposed to a traumatic event. When you have been exposed to multiple traumatic events and traumatic events of different kinds, then it becomes what they call complex PTSD, which is usually a combination between sexual abuse and physical abuse, or, you know, different co-occurring events. And so the difficulty when you have these things is when you're treating regular PTSD, it could actually be a trigger for a person who has complex PTSD because they've, you know, they have trauma on so many different levels.
So then how does somebody from the outside even approach this?
You mean somebody approach to help, or somebody from the outside?
Approach to help, or you know, just in humanity, you know, just the everyday interactions.
What I would have advised first and foremost is self-work. One of the things that I did was people who abuse you, they try to play with your reality, you know. And so what you have to do to stay on track is you start a journal. And what we know is a lot of those people can be nosy, so we have the benefit sometimes of these cell phones. And what we will know is you can have an app, and some of these cell phones actually allows you to change the icon of those apps. So if you're afraid that your partner might go on your phone and read your app or something like that, I mean, you know, your journal or whatever, then you need to, if you could, put a, you know, an app on here and change the icon so they don't know that it's your journal. But whenever something happens, when you guys get into it, when you wake up in the morning, whatever, you need to start jotting it down, writing it, so that you can go. Like if you say, hey, you did so-and-so, and I didn't do that. You know, I didn't say that. Because, you know, they will tell you, you know, they will call you a name, and you'll be like, did you just call me out my name? Like, I didn't call you out your name. What are you talking about? And so you'll start to doubt your reality. You have to write these things down, so that you know you're not tripping. You have to learn to trust yourself again, because this type of abuse will make you not even trust yourself. You know, you won't trust your eyes. You won't trust your ears. You won't even trust your emotions. And this is why it is sometimes very hard for a person to leave somebody who's abusive, because you can't trust your own senses. Your body will literally turn on you and attack you. It goes haywire. It's like, so the example that my therapist gave me is when you're dealing with emotional or mental abuse, your brain is like a motherboard. And when a drop of water hits the motherboard, it's short circuit. And so windows start popping up all over the place, right? And you can't get it to activate or shut down or do what you want it to do. That's what happens when you're under, you know, physical abuse. Your brain shorts. It causes brain damage, especially
right,
long-term abuse, you know. You look up and you've had a stroke, you have diabetes, you have dementia, you have Alzheimer's, you have, you know, high blood pressure, you have a pain that won't go away, you have an eating disorder, you know, and these abusers, they don't care if they kill you. They'll just go find another you. It's like a job. If you have a job and you die, this job still got to function. They'll hire somebody else to take your place the next day. So you don't let this job work you into the ground. You know, that's something that we understand. But you also have to have that mentality with your spouse or your mate, whoever you're with, you know. So, you know, just you have to work on yourself first. You journal to keep your sanity and also to learn to trust yourself. Again, you set small goals day by day, and you reward yourself, you know, for keeping those things. You know, daily affirmations and meditations and practicing mindfulness helps. You know, waking up and, you know, I couldn't look at myself in the mirror for years because I didn't like what I see. My brain told me that I was overweight or, you know, I was ugly, something was wrong with me. And I can go back and look at those pictures and videos and go, you had what? Like, I was on baby 11 looking like I hadn't had any children. But you couldn't tell me when I was in that situation because my partner, you know, he looks at me like he's disgusted. You know, he hasn't touched me the whole pregnancy, you know, and so many other things that they do just to make you feel like you're not good enough. You have to protect yourself from that. And so it gets to a point where you have to stop trying to figure out how to make the marriage work, how to save this person, or worrying about how to save yourself.
Right. Hey, you know what? This right here has been a healing for a lot of people out here, whether you know it or not, lady.
I hope so.
This is awesome. Oh, yeah. Whenever you get that book done, bring it up in here. You might have to go ahead and take them notes and all the rest of that. Send it to somebody who's going to process it.
You can help me.
But you need to get the book stamped out.
Look, I'm going to pass you like you passed me. This is what I need you to do.
Well, we're about to go ahead and wrap this up. We're going to go ahead and play some music until the end of it. I appreciate you for coming out. Is there anything that anybody needs to know as far as, like, where to find you at or anything like that?
So right now, if anybody wants to find me, they can reach out to, you know, you, I suppose, because I'm still going through the stages where I protect my circle. And I'm not ready to open my personal space. Because one thing that I learned about abusers is they can sit back and watch you, and they're very, very patient, and they're very calculated, and they'll get to know you and what you like and your friends and your family, and they will mirror you, and this is how they come into your life. You know, oh, yeah, I love poetry. I love crocheting. I love this. And then after you give them your heart, they'll be like, I ain't never liked none of that shit. Where you get that from? You know, so I'm very careful and protecting my space and everything I had. You know, I shut down a lot of those venues in the process of going through the abuse. So if it's okay with you, they can reach out to me and ask questions via you. And if you'd like for me to return later and elaborate on those things, I'd be willing to do that.
Hey, I hope somebody can use that knowledge out there to keep themselves safe as well. All right, we're about to go ahead and wrap this up. We appreciate you guys for coming out to Epiphany Radio. This right here has been an interview with Jane Doe, Steve. And it has been a doozy of an interview, I'll tell you that much. I'll have to go ahead and go on a couple of tracks so I can sit back and relax and enjoy the afterglow of the after show. So I can go ahead and get it back. Right, here we go.
I hear my excitement. I recognize its cadence, how it feels like quickened breaths dancing across ivory keys. And as closed off as I may seem, that isn't really me. I'm almost free enough to tumble forward a little too carelessly. I just hear my missteps, sounding like an occasional B-flat. And I'm at odds with the elephant in the room. You have my attention, but I've questioned the soundness of my decision. I feel myself falter, knowing that we need to talk about this and actually address it. I'm hesitant. My excitement is notably checked, and the pounding I now feel in my chest is fear, a recurrence that I once again somehow wills as if I resist the peace I find in silence. Will you hear me? We listen, and the blending of our voices and conversation still has my heart racing, but this is just different. this is different. I hear my excitement. I recognize that I actually get to dance across those white keys in whatever the state is of my being. Acceptance doesn't insist on silencing hesitance nor dampening another's power. It doesn't highlight mistakes. Instead, we chose a composition that highlighted us. We just needed to address the elephant in the room. Essentially, Shani.
Every morning when I open up my eyes, to spend the rest of my life with you in sight, may I sing songs of love to you transposed from poems you've inspired to write. Break this pen, fill it with gold, make the tip silver with the purest of ink I deliver. Sky writings in the clouds, spoken words of love to you. Release thousands of beautiful butterflies, every colorful species of. Romantically set free from the heavens, dozens of champagne-flavored white doves. In your eyes I peer in deep. Visions, hopes, dreams of. Emotions wash over like some exotic ocean. The sounds of seagulls and golden pigeons take me away to far-off pavilions. As ears well in tuned with love listens as love sings. Words of elegance and magical things. Strings, those to my heart are pulled, led by your touch. You gently touch me. I'm touched and it's tickling. Stone me, bumblebee, I'm stone. Love sick, don't heal me. Put it in a bottle and pass some out to everyone. An epidemic, let it spread in a field of roses, pink, purple, burgundy, and red. I'd lie you down and take you to bed. Kiss your precious lips softly as I tell you goodnight. Tonight's breath I take with so much delight. To dream of you is not enough. Can I see you every morning when I open up my eyes? To dream of you, I yearn to see you every morning when I open my eyes. To spend the rest of my life with you in sight, may I. Sing songs of love to you transposed from poems you've inspired to write. Break this pen, fill it with gold, make the silver tip with the purest ink, I deliver it. Sky writings in the clouds, spoken words of love's out loud to you. Releasing thousands of beautiful butterflies, every colorful species of. Romantically set free from the heavens. Dozens of champagne-flavored white doves. In your eyes, I peer in deep. Visions, hopes, dreams of.
I use energy which should be given to my children to fight for him. Battling to stay with him, I fight so hard to be buried with him in death. A man who can't even cherish me in life on earth. When truly I've already died 1,000 times, likely more, the tears have outlived 116 pens. His focus shifted from my so-called friends to legends. And I still wait, and I wait, and I wait, and I hope and I pray for the shift to Gwen. As long as he's the center of attention and the sinner, I'll always feel like a beginner with him. It is a fight I can't win. I'm not powerful enough. Cheekbones are bare where a kiss should exist. Yet I fight to be buried beside him, to be buried. I fight to be buried with him. I fight for the shallow image, less love, for unknown reasons, for the empty, because I fight.
Mommy's here. I sit between her legs. I scream in anticipation of the comb pulling through my hair. I wince in pain as the comb hits a tangle. Mommy is not too gentle. The frustration emanates from her. I don't mind the momentary pain. I am sitting between my mommy's legs. I am connected to her for this moment in time. The love I feel consumes me. Her focus is on me alone. The tangle has been untangled. The comb glides through my hair. The comfort that this simple but routine action gives is indescribable. She then scratches my head to loosen the dandruff before washing my hair. Laying on the counter with my hair hanging off the edge, water running through my hair. Shampoo is applied to my scalp. The rhythmic scrubbing is soothing to the inner her child. After the shampoo, the drying of my hair, then the parting of my hair. The application of sulfur 8 mixed with hair grease, all done while sitting between her legs. It's a place of safety and perceived love. She must love me if she cares for my appearance. I deduce with my childish heart. Now here comes the instrument that strikes fear for my precious ears and scalp. The hot comb that straightens the most stubborn curls into submission. Hearing the grease sizzle, praying it doesn't frizzle my hair, leaving that burnt hair smell permeating through the ear. Now comes the best part. Torn paper bag strips used to curl my hair. It's a special occasion tomorrow. It's the first day of school. This memory plays in my head as I rake the comb through my mommy's hair. The feeling of love is overwhelming as I comb my mommy's hair. The roles have been reversed. I now take care of my mommy's hair. I stand behind her. She sits in the chair, feeling the love with each stroke. I roll her hair with foam rollers with precision. It's a connection that can't be replaced. It's a natural progression of the parent-child relationship. I now get to pour my love into my mommy's hair. And that's the wisdom of Mama Donna.
Let's play with this a little bit. Let's see how we can make this a little fun. Let's go. Agape, a poem. Ooh, I like that. Permissible love comes without permission, an invasion of sunlight and darkened spaces. An antiquated image of jovial faces up against the plushy groove of grown gazes. The slush of Chicano's icy melting into my cozy rush with thuggy legs into hydrants that rub like gauges gush. I'm a child again, filling the facade like cascading moon, spilling into landscapes, making midnight royal blue. Blooming in bushels, blossoming into bosoms that grew with age. While facing the memoirs of sages as our thickly thighs get caught in the web of robust swagger and refined jawline. Setting up ginning and juicing as we start to tan in our pubescent essence. Bashful responses, the girded cheeks with dentured expressions of her meekness. Kindred kisses kindled by a sweet breath. To his grandeur and mannerisms, the taste of manna,
Warm breath in the color of cream, the clouds and heaven flowing streams of rain. The rain we sought for, thunder would strike, and we saw dipping between the steam and bubbling with you met and hess up when we would feather into kissing doves. I could hear you like a blaring trumpet in between my seconds of transition and dreams. You awaken my skin with memories of imagination, just thought of hands combing the definitive lines and curves of palms leave my troubles afar. Even share telepathic stares. The frequency of laughter, shofar stars and sunsets we are. And dwelling in agape, yeah. We are touching its womb. We are cradling its milk on our lips. We are dancing in a juniper, June, June, June. We are flaming in cool. We lift the bowls of its incense and dance. We illuminate like jade, jasper, quartz, and topaz. We are diamonds dipped in lemonade, golden with no words spoken. We are love. We are love. We are love, 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 love. We are love. And we love. Let me tell you something. That's so agape. Something to play with. Peace.
She calls me. Her presence beckons. Her essence demands it. Sassy, so sassy, but I like it. Smart mouth lady, yeah, I like it. Still those lips I long to kiss, but she be like, and I be like, shh. I kiss her and shut it. Yes, she calls me. Like a whisper traveling through wind, my body listens, and my composure hardens. A situation is starting, I can tell, cause her nipples are popping like fresh California grapes in a garden. Ripe and delicate, yes, a fire's starting, and my detector goes off every time she calls. Every time she calls, bring that beat back. Every time she calls.
Our love was once a wide open highway that was previously a wide and spacious road. It was started by kids cutting this way through the grass. To hear it is a comical distract. It's all abstract until it is your story that's being told. A thin line is cold that precipits volatile venomous spits, and they drape like icicle sticks from high up atop a bottomless pit. And the path is ever slick, and each step is a potential slip with no handrails to grip. It's like unknowingly going on a one-way trip to the precipice of Everest without a stitch to protect from the elements. My love has dragged me here naked. How could this once love that I vigorously pursued turn about to hunt me? And every shot near my head ends with eh. I tried to miss. That's a way of saying you promised me happiness. Oh, why has my treasure that was once sweet to the palate become face-twisting bitterness? Extraness. It all reeks of excrement. My heart groans between screaming expletives as it drops and shatters, with no one to pick it up. So I dust myself off, leaving more emotional blood in the dirt. What is my worth? Alive, but under the earth. Put it this way. If the sky is positive, the ground is neutral, then my graph should surely be negative. In this place where I am, there are sure to be raindrops there. Because I am underwater, strapped to a chair at the bottom of the Marianas, with my constant companion, despair. I have killed her honor by not being honest, and it is her pain that makes my heart break. She screams, "Pay attention in class." But the lesson is the handwriting on the wall. Poem.
Never been a time that I did not love you. Even before I met you, I craved you, yearned for you in my soul. Your character etched upon the doorpost of my spirit. Your scent, your touch, your voice, all pre-recorded and stored in the banks of my memory. And the day that I first laid eyes on you, I felt a quickening. Though I had never before beheld your face, my soul knew who you were, recognized its mate. Finally, a name, a face, given to the love that I had waited for all my life.
You didn't know me. You didn't know me.
I was just a nice girl that you would befriend and like, but you couldn't, you didn't, you wouldn't love me. You taught me how to let go and let you, schooled me in the finer aspects of pleasure, treasured the way I quickly learned how to please you, how I mastered the ministrations and made you come back for more. And my soul, seeking recognition and welcome, sought every imaginable opportunity and avenue to win you, overruled my common sense, and drove me to new depths of desperation, constantly running, fearing that any base I left uncovered would lead you to seek others. So I emptied out my cup, poured out every drop of my self-respect, pride, money, shame, gave you everything. And all I ever wanted in return was for you to love me back. But
you didn't know me.
Drank from my cup until you were full and I was empty. And then you wandered, listening to the call of other women who connect to your ego but have no connection to your soul. And their pomp and circumstance drowns out the soft, sweet melody of my devotion. And I am left standing here, ripped apart, devoid of my sanity. The barest threads of my heart remaining in a pool of salty tears. trying frantically to piece together the hopes that are now dashed into a million tiny pieces, and my soul still staring in the distance, calling for you, reaching out for a lifeline to hold on to, but you didn't know me. And in the silence of my solitude, with my will to live buried beneath my need to not hurt anymore, I give up the ghost, and now there is no me to know.
This is poetic.
Abstract love. She's a tattoo of my mirror's reflection, trying to find her direction, not knowing that her roadmap begins and ends with me, and we overlap at love's intersection, given a permanent connection to why we are drawn together, and our permanent ink will never fade or blemish with time, because it's forged with an unbreakable bond outside of time, and that is love that flows as effortlessly as water, while our thirst is quenched while I'm kissing his daughter, holding my excitement, wiping away my resentment, cherishing the soliloquy of her unspoken words. Internally we are so connected that all I heard was her inability to let go of our bond, that even a broken shattered glass was gone, and our tattoos branded across our souls with ink makes me close my eyes and not blink, cause that natural muscle reaction could come with tears of more broken metaphors of how she or I could hurt each other more, while glowing in the moonlight of heartache, trying to demonstrate a demonic kind of love exorcism that will remove all pain and all hurt, change my cynicism to realism. My tattoo imprint of her can never be removed. Will I simply want her to be permanent, and I approve the message of unity and true love.
Chained to lust. Usually, I can't wait to break free. But chained next to you, I can be me. A real unchained animal. 50 shades is subliminal. The link in these chains. Forget the whip, baby, this tongue game is insane.
Mixed with fiery emotions and passion, but it's that love. It's never for the streets, made between the sheets. Yet we are greedy for more and never understand love forevermore. Cherish the love in your ink. Hold on to that which you seek. Abstract love.
Sexy.
Abstract love.
You've got me sounding like espresso, anxiously expressing with more fullness than I expected to. My hesitance upended as forethought is poured over everything I've said to you. We drink our coffee and pretend not to look at each other. A little foam the color of silence wants to cling to my lips, but I lick them, tasting honesty and ink. This poet's eventual hello. I call it sweet. Essentially Johnny.
She's frozen heat. All that she's felt can't seem to melt her tried life.
She developed dry ice to comfort her 7 pounds beating, bleeding love in dark light. Even her bed sheets part like Red Sea's beloved is cold-blooded, yet star-studded. She manages to shine like the ice in her jewelry. Her duty is callous, the saddest heartbeat complete. Her song is costly, killing her softly. Her degree stays on freeze, frozen, hoping someone felt her melt just a little. A nice start is to offer her the fire of love for her iced heart. Shivering, delivering hail, hoping the indent in her heart can be read like braille. Trying not to fail at chilling temperature when raised unexpectedly, especially when she feels snowed in. She becomes blinded in ice rays as her ice age. She can barely beat beating heat that tries to infiltrate her mind state. It appears to be hate, but it's hurt. Ice cream, I love you. Even when your puddles melted, I felt it like living water. You are destined to make greatness survive as you have for so long. You are ice strong. Within you, I'm frozen. Whisper loud.
Cross-legged, surrounded in sheets of loose leaf, snippets of poetry and prose, anything goes just so long as it's sincere. I want to see all of you, hear your soul, fold pieces of our pieces, play eeny, meeny, miny, mo. You spit my pieces, and I spit yours. Deep into the cushion of night, maybe we might find an us in our eyes, a we in our smiles, an embrace that erases the miles between us, a blush and giggles while I wiggle closer and closer still to fill your open arms with me. Breathe deeply, like home, like belong, like peace, like the ease washing over me when you kiss me ever so gently on forehead and cheek. When you speak me beautiful and gift, when you lift chin, look into my eyes, sigh, and then finally, grace my lips with a trip to where the drip comes from. I taste the sum of my fears on your tongue, the possibilities plus something that feels like danger, like the stranger I know love to be, plus maybes and what ifs. Dangling from the cliffs of these mountains I've built so I won't fall into anything. Not love, not dreams, not anything. Tears sting the corners of my eyes and you wonder why something heavy has entered the room. Mon ami, my happiness is always doomed by memory. And these moments to me foreshadow a misery I am far too familiar with. You wanna lift my burden, but I'm uncertain of our collective ability to do so. They are so very weighty. You would be crazy to even try. And it all makes me wonder why I stopped dating in the first place. I'm sorry I even wasted your time.
There's a need to be silent until you're good. What does that look like? And when you arrive at that peak of goodness, is it elusive? Is it fleeting? Is there a need to be invisible, ink and ways indiscernible until your state of being is acceptable? I low-key hate the act of brave face. I accept how you feel. I pray your silence is contemplative, that you make this a practice. The alternative feels like hiding, like the wholeness of our experience is irrelevant, and the duality of existence is not what we're meant to feel. If you are hiding, thinking that you should, I may ask if you're good, but that's just the Baltimore in me. I understand what not really feels like, what resulting assumptions sound like, and how that noise goes away when I sleep. I'll keep you lifted. Through any pretense or brave face, sit with you in a safe place. I'll even write with you with invisible ink. Essentially Chinese.
Love jokes. I got love jokes. I got love jokes. For you.
I can't stop thinking about you. I doubt you know the depth of my heart. Deeper than seas, I want to seize every moment to touch you. In ways that change night to days. I crave your essence. It's like dope to me, dope in me. My dopamine goes crazy when I'm around you. I found you between pain and insane. You change the way I think when I'm in your pink. You pull passion from your love pocket. You're my love Jones. Your skin tone butterscotch. Your sweat sweet peach schnapps. I'm thirsty for your back shots. Let's not go too far, but keep moving. Don't stop. You got me scratching that itch for fixes. Just your smile's dial says it all. You're my favorite withdrawal that turned my wood to stone. Love Jones, my bones ache until I touch you. No one but you makes me feel this way. I don't think you knew, but I got a Love Jones for you. Whisper loudly.
Thoughts bound to the stars as her lips yearned for my kiss and her body trembled and quivered in my grips. I embraced her, making love from the moment we met. Every action filled with passion, stimulated from the first hello. So when I first entered her mind, I was turned on as if her thoughts melted into musical tones created by piano keys and strings of harps and cello. And the intrigue of such mystery surely followed, touching the soul and heart of this man that was once broken and hollow. Across the celestials, our soul sought as one. No more man or woman far beyond the fleshy penetration. But once that portal opened, the yearn for a deeper connection had finally spoken. The language was no longer spoken from the tongue. Our emotions and physical touch disappeared into the past, as physically making love that most experience has been surpassed.
No longer wish for just your soft touch and sensitive tone, for we've taken what we've built and made so much more than just a happy home. Emotionally and detached ourselves from this cold, angry world every chance we get to be alone. We became tethered and spiraled energy, vibrations bound as one. We shoot up and out, these human vessels, by the powers of the moons and sun. The truest and deepest depiction describing our love making. Good morning. Thank you for waking up today.
Last night I went to the moon, seeking a sleep therapist for my pet insomnia. When I took to the vet, the doctor asked me, was his nose wet, or if it was a dog or a cat, even though right there it sat. So I understandably got upset. I said, Doc, when it started bothering me in the daytime, I knew things between us was not fine. Why is this nocturnal beast basking in my sunshine? And those are just the facts, to be exact, Dr. Jack. Yours is a very interesting case to me. So tell me, what would you do to cope? Well, at first I tried to pay it no mind, because he left me alone during night's most quiet times. But at my job, he'd come back. And what would you do? I tried to find things that would distract me. I do this, and I do that. Last encounter ended in a scrap. I was too tired to fight, so I took a little nap. And dreamed a dreamless dream while I floated on a raft from my back. And when I awoke, I felt beyond great. No gorilla, no ape. The house was quiet and all mine, and not a trace of insomnia could I find. The clock read 2:59, 3 hours and 1 minute before the start of my grind. So I took in some YouTube to kill some time, and before a long time, my eyes went from slits to little lines. As I traveled in my mind. And moments later, my alarm clock crowed. It's time to rise and shine. Only one thing. I'm beat. Poem.
All right. We appreciate everybody for coming out to this very, very special pop-up. Be on the lookout. We'll be doing some crazy things coming up in the near future, what may have you. But I'm about to give me some rest. My morning started at 4:30. Even if I can make it in good, I was on the edge. I'm about to go to bed. I'll be easy now.